Hi, my name's Mandy, and I'm the RNLI Water Safety Officer for the area around Wells Lifeboat Station. I'm also crew on both of the boats that we have here. This series of podcasts is designed to help share some local knowledge to help you keep yourselves that little bit safer whilst enjoying this beautiful coastline. And today we're going to be talking about tidal cutoff. So we've got 2 out of 3 people being rescued by Wells volunteer lifeboat crews that are cut off by the tide. And it's also the number one reason for a lifeboat call out. It's the most preventable kind of shout. So knowing when Wells Bar high tide is and getting back to the main part of the beach, dry sand or dry land, at least 4 hours before, helps you to avoid being cut off by the tide. And this tip works well along the coastline between Brancaster Staithe through Wells to Blakeney and Clye. So this kind of shout is the mainstay of the inshore lifeboat, or ILB as we call it. And in 2022, 52 people were rescued by the crew's volunteers at Wells Lifeboat Station. 37 of them were cut off by the tide. So that's quite a lot of call-outs just for tidal cut-off. So this morning, we're here with James Betteridge, who's one of the long-standing ILB helms. And we're just going to have a little chat with James about his experience on the ILB and also some of the rescues that he's done for people that have been cut off by the tide. So, hi James. So, how long have you been volunteering for the RNLI?
Good afternoon, Maddie. I've been volunteer for the RNLI for 19 years now. First started in 2005. Very green around the gills and a lot of skills to learn. So it's a continual learning experience. I've been on the inshore lifeboat for the entire duration of that time and also the all-weather lifeboat. And as time's gone on, became a helmsman.
So how long have you been doing that?
I've been passed out as a helm for just over 6 years now.
Okay. So you've done a good stint on the inshore.
Yeah, the knees feel it. You never know what you're going to get. And obviously, like you just said, it's a massive part of the work for the ILB is cut off by tide.
Yeah.
With the public beaches that we've got and the interest, the nature in the area, we're inundated continually with people, and it's very easy with the shifting sands and tidal areas to get a cut off. There is a lot of information available where necessary, but it's a very difficult area of the coastline to ever get to grips with because it's always changing.
Yeah, and the tide goes out an awful long way here, which is not the same everywhere else. So well, we do have some unique features around here, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Our coxswain said one day, he said, we're Wells next to sea when the tide's in, and we're Wells very long way from the sea when it's out.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. So you're obviously volunteering for the RNLI. So what's your day job?
So I'm self-employed. I've been self-employed as an electrician for 2001. I set my own business up and continually been doing that. The benefit of that is it gives me the flexibility to put a lot of time into my volunteering at the station over the last 19 years, and you get out what you put in.
So you've been very dedicated over the 19 years to put all that time in. How do you balance being available for the approximate 40 shouts a year that the ILB gets, plus the ELB, and then there's all the practice launches and the training that you described to keep you in all the crew skills current? How do you balance that?
Sometimes it's tricky. I mean, we've got a great setup, great team, with people varied commitments in various areas of their life. So,
yeah.
You know, some can put a lot more in than others. With myself being self-employed, if, you know, we get a shout, I'm not earning money because I'm, you know, doing that if it's during working hours.
Yeah, but that's my choice. Massive.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, that's my choice to do that. And, you know, you never know what you're going to get.
No, and of course, not every, as you say, not everybody's able to make that choice because they're not self-employed. So in terms of thinking about cut off by the tide shouts, if there is such a thing as a typical tidal cut off shout, you know, can you talk about what that's like to be involved in and what you're doing and what everybody else is doing?
I mean, over the 19 years, it's always been one of the main reasons for a call out. I kind of see that in the last few years, going back a while, it was fairly predictable. If it was 2 hours before high water, we kind of think, well, it's likely to be a cut off by tide. But now it seems with the different sand patterns and tidal patterns, it can be anything from 4 hours before to an hour before, depending where people have got themselves to. So when the pager goes, you could be in the middle of cooking dinner, or you could be up the ladder with someone's house in bits. You never know what you're going to get, so you get down there, and depending on who else is there, depends on, you know, whether other people are at work. You've got to take the boat, pick your crew to come in. The information comes down of what we've been tasked with, and, you know, we go accordingly, and that's where all our training and the time we've put in comes into the fore. Go out and hopefully do some good.
So when your pager goes off, let's say 3.5 hours before high water, you pretty well know in your mind that it's somebody cut off by the tide. What's going through your head?
You could think, oh, how frustrating, you know, what a waste of time yet again, blah, 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 but not at all. I mean, there's a lot of people put a lot of work in, whether it be the RNLI, Coast Watch, and the other bodies and resources in the area, and people will miss the fact of where they are, and sometimes it's awareness of your situation.
Yes.
And people, perhaps, the only thing I would say, perhaps people, when they get out of the car and they get a picnic together, is the consideration of their surroundings and the natural environment, which is always changing, whether it be weather or tidal situations. Yeah. And, you know, listen to your kids when they're saying, we need to check this out.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I think as well, when you're on holiday, your perception of risk is different. Nobody wants to think about it.
And when the sun's shining, I mean, there's some sandbar areas that aren't always on every low tide visible.
Mm.
And without getting into the complications of varying tides with neaps and springs.
Yes.
It is a changing. So where you stood last week, 3 hours before high water and everything was perfectly safe, the following week on a spring tide, in actual fact, that area or near to it's getting covered 4 hours before.
Yeah, and that's what one of the reasons that we've been seeing in the water safety messaging, that at least 4 hours before high water, so that message works for every time.
Absolutely.
Which is, it's important to have a simple message that we can transfer to the members of the public. So what sort of people are you rescuing? Are they old? Are they young? Are they men? Are they women? What we're talking about?
Every walk of life.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be a group of young lads with a crate of beer, or whether it be, you know, a single person walking with their dog that's been to the area over many years.
Yes.
Walked that area last year or even a couple of months ago, and all of a sudden it's an evolving situation. And the biggest thing that you come across is embarrassment.
Yeah.
And, I'm so sorry, you know, we don't mean to try, sorry, I'm so embarrassed. Don't worry about it. It's not a problem, you know, because we go out there and, you know, we're not there to judge. We go out, we'll bring the people back, and hopefully the biggest thing that comes of that is that actually they'll learn from it.
And hopefully never have that happen again to them.
And they go and see their friends and they spread the love of,
yes,
oh, don't go there, and or if you do, find out this and find out that, and you'll have a safe, fun day.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the key thing, isn't it? It's learning from the mistake and sharing it with as many people as possible is great if people are prepared to do that. So that's lovely. In terms of cut off by the tide, we've got some hotspots in the area. Can you talk a little bit about the areas where we are regularly?
Yeah, so to the west of the channel in Wales, so towards Holcombe, people will walk out from Holcombe Beach and they'll keep walking. And on a big spring tide, you can walk to very close to the West Cardinal Buoy.
The big black and yellow one at the end of the channel.
Which is obviously for shipping and vessels at sea. On a different set of tides, you won't get anywhere near it because they haven't gone out as far. And because of, look, it's lovely. It's very quiet over there. Let's go over there. That is one of the most common places that we regularly go into.
Yeah.
You'll get other areas of people cut off on the marshes. And that goes right away along the coast.
Yes.
So there are specific areas where people are prone to get cut off. It's less so the east side of the channel nowadays because the channel's that much deeper. So people don't paddle across. And it's where you've got shallow water and people paddle across and it's very inviting.
Yeah.
They don't see the implications of where the tide's going to come from.
No. And how fast it comes back in.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll get a drain or a gully and it's lovely. It's 6 inches deep and you paddle across with your dog and your kids.
Yeah.
And then an hour later, there's 2 foot of water really pushing through it.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't get back.
Mm.
And the biggest thing is don't panic and stand still.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things that we're really encouraging people to do is to stay calm and stay as dry as possible for as long as they can. Wading into the water can be a really hazardous thing to do. My sort of rule of thumb for that is if the water's above your knee, there's enough power in it to take your feet out from under you. So we've got quite a lot of hot spots in the area because of the nature with the marshes and things. So in terms of talking about marshes and things, can you explain how helpful it can be when somebody can give the Coast Guard, when they call 999, given a really precise location, what that means for you as a helm on the ILB?
Yeah, so we have different ways of pinpointing location. So we operate with what's called latitude and longitude. The Coast Guard will operate with a six-figure grid reference, which all walkers and such like will be familiar with from their Ordnance Survey maps. Now, there can be confusion with lat and long because if people aren't used to using it with the different decimal points, that can create a massive error with location. The easiest thing, and we've responded to people with this on numerous occasions, it's made things so much easier, is what three words?
Yeah.
Now, having what three words already on your phone means that you get a precise location within 3 feet of where you're standing. That what three words is understood by the Coast Guards or the emergency services who they're in contact with. They will then transform that into a Latin long for us or an Ordnance Survey reference. Or if we've got access, which is very difficult on the inshore boat because it's so wet and physical, on my own phone I've got what three words. So I could say, there they are.
Yep.
What we tend to do is use the, other members of the team at the station to say, hey, we've got these what three words, figure it out and send us the Latin long.
Yeah.
And we'll pinpoint it.
And of course, on the inshore, we've got a chart plotter. We can chart very precisely where that person is. So the difference between having a really precise location and us having something that's vague, where maybe somebody's in the water, how easy do you find it to actually physically see people and find people when they're in the water?
I think people understand that if you're, on the inshore, we're operating from generally, unless you stand up in the boat, from about 3 foot above the surface of the water. Now, if you've got, 6-12 inch ripples on the water.
Yeah, which is not much.
Someone in the water, you're probably not going to see them, or you may get a fleeting glimpse at 100 yards, but probably until you're 20 yards away.
Yeah. Which is really, really close. You've got to be almost on top of them
absolutely.
To see them. Yeah.
And, so if we've got a closer starting point, another situation is you know, a vague idea on the marshes, you might be able to see somebody, but you can't get to them.
Yes.
Because it's not been concise enough to actually make an entry point through a different creek or such like. So it gets very, very difficult. And another thing is stay where you are. Once you've given that position,
yeah.
If you were in a dangerous spot, say out on the marshes at Wells, and it's a little bit of a lower lying area,
mm-hmm.
right, we would advise, and we'd advise, say, you know, walk towards somewhere. Or,
yes.
But otherwise, we've had it several times before where we've got a location, we've gone to that location.
And they've all dead off.
And there's no one there.
Yeah.
We go back to the Coast Guard, they get in touch with the people. Oh, they've moved. Right, where to?
Yeah.
And this happened 3 times on one particular, you know, job we're on. It was very frustrating because don't walk yourselves into further danger.
No, and if it's dark, you don't know necessarily. Mm. You could be walking into creeks or whatever it is. And
yeah. And what someone perceives as, oh, it's wet underfoot here, actually, that's the safest place you'd be if it was in that particular place.
Yes. And, yeah. So you're talking about being wet underfoot. When do you rescue people that have been cut off by the tide? You know, are they generally ankle deep in water, knee deep in water, neck deep in water? You know what we're talking about
to
here.
To be fair, it varies right the way along from high and dry, and yeah. they'd have been all right if they'd have sat and waited for the tide to go again. Our biggest thing would be their panic and I must get back.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of places where you can get cut off, but in actual fact, 2 hours later, you'd be safe again.
If you had the good local knowledge, yeah.
With the local knowledge, but also changing weather conditions, 2 hours later, you might be dangerously cold. The biggest thing is not to panic and try and cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, how people are and their condition when we get to them, you know, it's the same as the animals they might have with them, you know, will be considered with regards to our course of action, whether we feel they need medical assistance.
Yeah.
Or whether they are ferried across a small area of water and released back into the public, so to speak.
So a lot of the people that we rescue that are cut off by the tide are dog walkers. Wells is a very, very popular place for dog owners. We welcome many, many dogs. So can you chat to us about, you know, when you rock up to a group of casualties that have got dogs, what sort of precautions maybe you're needing to take or what you're thinking about when you're doing that?
I'm very wary of the people. it makes no difference to me. I'm going for the animals as well as the people. A few years ago, we had a dog in the channel and it was the first time at the seaside, big old Rottweiler, and he was a lovely dog. And we'd seen him, people had phoned in, we launched the boat. And a fella came to me afterwards and said, that's ridiculous. Why have you launched that boat and put yourselves in danger to get that dog?
Mm.
And I said, you don't own a dog, do you, mate?
No,
and he said, no. I said, right. I said, if that was my dog, I'd be in after it.
Mm. And that's exactly what we don't want people to do.
Exactly that. And we got to the dog and he disappeared under as we were approaching him. And we got him on board. He was all right. Big old Rottweiler, only a young dog. And the look of relief on his face without us.
Oh.
And when we got back to the shore where the family were, that were frantic, he was quite happy sitting in the boat. He was puffed out and, you know, another 30 seconds, a couple of minutes, and he wouldn't have come back up.
No.
What I would say, the biggest thing that from my point of view that came out of that, is if those people had walked down the shoreline with the flow of the tide and encouraged him to swim with the flow of the tide, he'd have come out in unharmed.
Yeah.
What they were trying to do was call him back and he couldn't battle the current.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard. And one of the things that, as you rightly said, were really discouraging people from doing is going in after their own dogs.
Well, you see it frozen lakes.
100%. And obviously, most dogs are better swimmers than humans. So if your dog's getting taken out by the tide, you are certainly going to get taken out by the tide. So as you say, walking along the side, staying dry, calling your dog in is the best thing that you can do. And if that doesn't work, call in 999 and the RNLI will launch the lifeboat in order to save an animal, in order to stop their owner going in after them. Absolutely. So in terms of animals, I know that you've been involved with rescues other than dogs. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you never know. You never know what you're going to get. And going back, must be 18 years, I think, 17, 18 years. We got a call one Sunday afternoon. The beach was very busy and there were two horse riders. First time this particular horse had been to the beach. Basically, they got cut off by the tide coming back from an area.
And the horses and the horse riders.
Horses and the horse riders, and they're on a little bit of high ground. Tide was making, so they were surrounded then by water.
Right.
One of the horses had never been here, as I say. One of them panicked and bolted and ran across through the water back to the beach. Members of the public gathered the horse. That wasn't a problem, but there was this other horse. Wouldn't move. It was stuck on the sand, and the girls were desperate, the two lady girl riders. We went and picked them up first, brought them back into shore, and they were distraught. Because
the horse was still there.
We'd left a crew member with the horse, went back to it, coaxed it alongside the boat. Our biggest danger was if the horse panicked, trying to climb into the boat.
Yes.
So there was a lot of trepidation from our side, and we just gently brought it in. And
the horse was swimming alongside the boat.
I think the pictures are probably still on our website.
Yeah. So the horse was swimming alongside the boat.
And
being
he was
guided
really
by...
calm. And we brought him into the shore, and the vets came and checked him out. And the RSPCA were involved to check out the welfare of the horses. And there's several got commendations from the RSPCA. So, yeah, my mum and my sister like that one.
Well, it's amazing, as you say, you never know what you're going to go to. So thank you, James, for sharing these amazing insights, and thank you for giving up your significant amounts of your time to help save lives at sea alongside the rest of the crew.
Yeah, no problem.
So those of you that have listened to other podcasts will know that at the end of the podcast I do a little roundup just to remind you of what we talked about, some of the key things. So first thing is lifeboat crews are volunteers and they're there to help you, so please be polite and kind to them. On a water safety front, to avoid getting cut off by the tide, get back to the main part of the beach, dry sand or dry land, at least 4 hours before Wells Bar high tide time. So that's at least 4 hours before Wells Bar high tide time. So the other thing that we talked about was dogs in the water. Please don't encourage your dog into the water when the tide's going out, especially in channels and creeks where the water's funneling back to the main body of the sea very quickly. Dogs are pretty strong swimmers, but there is a limit to what they can tolerate. If your dog is struggling to get back out of the water, our advice would be to walk whilst you're staying dry alongside the dog and keep calling it in. If it still can't get across the currents and out of the water, call 999, ask for the Coast Guard and explain the situation. Lifeboats have and will continue to be launched to save animals, to help prevent their owners risking their own lives to save their beloved pets. If you are cut off by the tide, staying calm and dry for as long as possible is really important, and call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard at the earliest opportunity. It really helps the Coast Guard and you to have a precise location. What three words is ideal? So hopefully that you've had some interesting insights in what it's like to be a crew member, and some useful tips about how to avoid being cut off by the tide. Thanks, have a great day.